Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for June 10th, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
They use the UV light to extend their visual range.
The retina is more adaptable than we thought previously, and it's much more than a camera.
It looks as though that visual part of the brain has been taken over by the echolocation system.
Developing a really keen sense of smell, which is a hallmark for most mammals, probably led to an increase in brain size.
This week, new research suggests that the sense of smell led to bigger brains in mammals. Also, what reindeer can see that we can't, and how some blind people use echolocation to get around. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on how the retinas of deaf people help them thrive without hearing.
The peripheral vision of deaf people is more developed than that of hearing people. This according to University of Sheffield neuroscientist Charlotte Codina. She and her colleagues imaged the retinas of people who had been deaf from birth. They found that neurons for transmitting visual information are allocated differently, enhancing peripheral vision.
What we found was that the neurons were spread differently around the retina in deaf people to capture more peripheral information. So they were directing less neurons to central vision and more to those areas that correlate to peripheral vision.
This helps deaf people in daily life, from spotting a bus to communicating in sign language.
Sign language actually uses peripheral vision. If you look at deaf people signing to one another, they look at each other's faces, they look to the eye, and the hands are moving rapidly with small movements, and those movements are being taken in using peripheral vision. And it's very difficult for hearing people to do the same thing effectively when they first start learning sign language.
She says scientists used to believe that the retina functions like a passive camera for transmitting visual signals, but the new study suggests otherwise.
The retina is more adaptable than we thought previously.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. The expression blind as a bat is inaccurate, since bats aren't actually blind. But they don't use their eyes to navigate in the dark. Instead, they use a technique called echolocation. And it turns out a handful of blind humans can actually do the same thing. Justin Warner has that story.
Blind people develop all sorts of ways to find their way around. A handful can even echolocate like bats or dolphins. They make vocal clicks and listen to the echoes bouncing off nearby objects to detect them. Now, University of Western Ontario neuroscientist Melvin Goodale and his colleagues have shown that the brain's visual processing center actually handles this auditory skill.
It looks as though that visual part of the brain has been taken over by the echolocation system.
Now, it's long been known that blind people's brains often repurpose the visual centers to other senses like hearing and touch, but this is the first time echolocation's been placed in that context. Goodale's team studied two subjects. One, Daniel Kish, has been blind since he was a baby and spontaneously began echolocating at around 18 months. The other, Brian Bushway, went blind at 14 and learned echolocation from Daniel. The researchers closely recorded each of the men as they navigated around in an outdoor setting.
And then we later took those sound files, and in some of them we arranged it so there were no longer any echoes there. Everything else was there, the traffic noise, the wind and the trees and the clicks, but no echoes.
When they played the recordings back to the subjects in the lab, the volunteers' visual centers kicked into high gear when they heard the echoes, but not during the echo-free recordings.
And what was also interesting was that when you looked at the activity in auditory cortex, in the part of the brain that normally processes sound, we couldn't see any difference between the activity when a sound file with echoes was being played and a sound file without echoes. Clearly, the auditory cortex had to extract information from each of the sound files, but the processing of the echoes seemed to be done uniquely, at least at the resolution that we could see in visual cortex.
Goodale says the findings not only shed light on this remarkable ability, but also could lead to better echolocation training techniques so that more blind people can take advantage of this alternative navigation system.
Thanks, Justin. Human eyes can't see ultraviolet light, and people exposed to too much UV suffer from a painful condition called snow blindness. That's because the high-energy light damages the eye.
And that is a highly uncomfortable, very painful condition, which is like sunburn on the cornea.
That's University College London neuroscientist Glenn Jeffrey. He and his colleagues recently discovered that reindeer are spared the affliction.
These animals don't get it.
Not only that, these Arctic inhabitants can see UV.
They use the UV light to extend their visual range because for most of their life, it's quite dark and you want to get every bit of light you can out in that world and make sense of it.
For instance, being able to see UV makes things like food and predators easier to spot in the snow. He adds that seeing into the UV range is uncommon in mammals, probably due to our nocturnal evolutionary history.
Reptiles and insects and everybody sees a much wider range than we do. We've evolved a very, very narrow little band, I'm afraid.
But he says that other snowbound animals can probably also see UV light.
We've got reindeer, we've got polar bear, we've got Arctic fox, we've got all these animals, and they're not suffering from snow blindness.
Understanding how the reindeer visual system works could shed light on better ways to treat eye diseases in humans. Most mammals have a good sense of smell, and they have unusually large brains for their body size. As Suzanne reports, those big brains may owe their size to that well-developed sense of smell.
Vertebrate paleontologist Thomas McCreaney of St. Mary's University in Texas and his colleagues made CT scans of the brains of two 190-million-year-old mammalian fossils found in China. The fossils are called Morganucodon and Hadrocodium, and they lived at the time of the dinosaurs.
They provide some sort of an approximation of what the most primitive mammal was like in terms of its brain and sense of smell. And based on these CT scans, we were able to reconstruct what the brain looked like, and we found that they had very large olfactory bulbs in their brain, which is a portion of the brain that's devoted to sense of smell. Developing a really keen sense of smell, which is a hallmark for most mammals, probably led to an increase in brain size.
In addition, he says areas of the brain devoted to processing tactile information were also enlarged, but that visual and hearing acuity didn't arise until later in mammalian evolution.
Thanks, Suzanne. Human brains aren't the biggest in the animal kingdom, but they are the most densely folded. It's believed that the extra surface area allows us to think in complex ways. Now, Yale University neurosurgeon Murat Gunel and his colleagues have identified a tiny part of one gene for a protein called laminin that plays a pivotal role in the folding. Surprisingly, the same genes found in mice, which have unfolded brain tissue. But in mice, the gene affects blood vessels and the membrane around the brain.
They are still important for that function in humans, but also somehow we switched it to use in our brain cells as well, in neurons.
The evidence came from a rare patient who's missing the folds in her brain's visual center, which makes it hard for her to link images to abstract thoughts.
The occipital lobe, the back of the brain, the visual centers lost the folds, not the rest of the brain. So we don't quite understand that.
In our final story today, Suzanne learned that the majority of Neanderthals, like us, were right-handed.
That's the conclusion reached by University of Kansas anthropologist David Frayer and his colleagues after they examined Neanderthal teeth. He says our extinct cousins probably held meat in their teeth, pulling it away from themselves with one hand while using the other to cut it with stone tools. Sometimes the tools would slip, leaving scratch marks.
Imagine pulling with your left hand and then processing something with your right hand, a hide or cutting meat. And every now and then the stone tool would slip over and hit the enamel surface and leave a mark on the tooth. And the marks that are done when an individual's pulling with the left and then cutting with the right hand are going to be oblique marks that run from the upper left to the bottom right of the tooth.
He says that 90% of the teeth they looked at had marks indicating right-handedness. Humans have the same ratio of right-hand dominance.
So it's the identical ratio that we see in modern populations.
In contrast, apes have a more balanced distribution of handedness.
In apes, it's about 50-50 or 60-40 or something. The characteristic that we see in modern humans everywhere is it's 9-to-1, 90% right and 10% left.
It's thought that the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body and also language. So the results support the controversial idea that Neanderthals may have been capable of speech.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll tell you how baby birds quench their thirst while in the nest, and how cats are spreading a deadly brain disease to wildlife in the Midwest. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.